Hello, this is Keith, and whether you're an alien, a ghost, a robot, or some other wonderful creature, I'm glad to be talking with you again. As I'm recording this, I just got back recently from New Jersey Web Fest in 2024. That was a really great time. I met some amazing, talented people and heard some fantastic content. And I can just say that the indie audio drama scene is alive and well and deserving of your attention. In fact, I encourage you to go to New Jersey Web Fest's website and check out the winners from this year. Not only audio dramas, but also short films and web series. They're all fantastic, and I think you'll find something you'll love. In addition, if you'd like to continue to support me and my work, check out my other shows at alienghostrobot.com. All right, let's just jump into the next episode of An Invisible Sun. An Invisible Sun by W. Keith Timms. Chapter 10. Catherine returned just moments before we departed. The shuttle detached from the Starliner, along with all the others, and together descended in graceful spirals, like choreographed dancers to their various destinations on Mars. Catherine asked me if I enjoyed the trip. I told her I did. We managed small talk until the shuttle hit Mars's thin atmosphere, and the roar of the engines and turbulence makes conversation difficult again. The noise of our descent turned to a low whine as the shuttle leveled out and skimmed over the surface of Mars like an airplane. We crossed a desert of orange sand with dark rocks scattered across it like confetti. Now and again, one could see a metallic dome or antenna array rising from the surface, but otherwise it's all barren. It is strangely beautiful, not merely from the colors of the terrain, but that it remains in its natural state. How unusual to see countless miles of terrain without the mark of humanity's presence upon it. For now, at least. Eventually, the shuttle slowed, coasting over a huge metal door in the ground that slid open to receive us. Lights stabbed upward from within, and we descended with grace and ease down under the Earth. Well, no, it wouldn't be Earth, would it? The stewards helped us out of the shuttle's airlock and onto the hard concrete of the underground landing pad. My first step on another planet. I took a moment to feel the low gravity and cautiously tested my steps on the surface. I tasted the metallic tang of the recycled air inside the underground chamber. It was like a mouthful of pennies. Romantically, I felt like I ought to be looking across a sweeping vista of sand and rock towers. Instead, I had this tiny utilitarian underground landing pad. No etched glass or beautiful architecture like the Gateport, just plastic, metal, and concrete. And where were all the people? Once all the other passengers cleared out, the place felt empty. There was a tunnel street beyond, but no one walked past or hung around outside. A lanky security guard perched on a stool before a few monitors, head propped lazily in his hand. Catherine was behind me, speaking with a woman in a Carillon uniform at the check-in desk. It was just us four. And where was Evan? Maybe he didn't get my message. Or maybe he can't be here for reasons I don't want to think too hard about. I moved to the door to get a better look at my first Martian tunnel street. It's wide and with a rounded roof containing a roadbed made of some sort of dark brown asphalt. Steel beams reinforced the tunnel walls and little blue lights ran along it in both directions. There was a taxi parked by the curb, though it reminds me more of a dune buggy than a car, with its oversized tires and roll cage construction. Down the tunnel, I heard indistinct sounds reverberating from afar, like machinery or traffic. But otherwise, it was eerily quiet. Catherine walked up behind me, pulling her rolling luggage along.
Hey, your friend's not here yet?
Not yet. Probably just held up in traffic.
There is no traffic on Mars.
Well, no, okay. Sometimes a transport will break down and block a tunnel for a while, and then everything goes to hell. So, maybe.
He knows you're coming, right?
I left a message telling him when I was arriving. I haven't actually spoken to him since.
You haven't?
Well, you know how tricky communications between Earth and Mars are.
I didn't think it would be prudent to mention he's wanted by the police and associated with a radical fringe group. She sensed my worry. She took out a leather wallet from her jacket's inner pocket.
Look, I'm going to be hitting some clients in the area today, and then heading out to a bunch of other places. But here's my card. Give me a call if you, you know, need something or get lost or anything. I hate to think of you wandering around Mars all alone.
I accepted the card and read the front. Catherine Reynolds, VP of Sales, Dante Entertainments.
I will. Thank you.
She put her wallet away and glanced at the cab.
Okay, then. It was nice meeting you, Christopher, but I gotta get going. Have fun on your vacation.
She walked to the cab, her steps practiced for Mars's gravity.
Goodbye.
She smiled at me as she opened a gull-wing door on the taxi, tossed her luggage inside, and then followed it into the cab. And she drove off. I fished out my tablet and tapped Catherine's card on the screen, adding the information on the card's nanochip to my electronic address book. Curiously, I pull up Dante Entertainment's network site. A rather racy picture of a nude couple in a sensual embrace flashed onto my screen. There's text advertising the finest in erotic products, but slightly embarrassed, I didn't bother to read any more. Fortunately, there was still no one in the tunnel to have caught me looking. I found a bench and waited. It was so quiet. It's the absence of people that unnerved me most. Everywhere in the metro, even in underground where people stayed off the streets, the sound of humanity never escapes your perception. So, silence means something is wrong, out of place, or different. Here, I was surrounded by it. No cars, no conversations, no police sirens, nothing but ventilation fans and the distant rattle of machinery. I pulled my earpiece out of my pocket and linked it to my tablet, dialing Evan's number. The phone rang several times, and then his voicemail picked up.
You've reached Evan Grieg. I'm sorry, but I can't answer your call. Do leave a message, won't you?
Evan, it's me. Christopher, that is. I'm here, on Mars, at the landing pad in Candor Chasma. I left you a message that I was coming, and... Well, it doesn't matter. I'm guessing you're on your way, and got held up, so I'll,
But part of me knew he wasn't coming.
Look, just give me a call, all right? Thanks.
Back inside, the security guard wore the dark gray uniform of a Martian township deputy sheriff. He didn't move a muscle except his eyes as I approached, lifting them to look at my face.
Hello. How can I call a taxi?
I A few minutes later, I was hunched down in the cramped back seat of another buggy-like taxicab as it glided along the paved tunnels of Candor Chasma Township. The driver was separated from me by a metal mesh grate. He was a long-faced, scrawny man with white blonde hair pulled into a messy ponytail. There wasn't much to see as we drove, only the tunnels rolling by. In the relative darkness, it was hard to tell how fast we're going or how far. The tunnels do rise and fall slightly, and every so often I felt sure the vehicle left the ground for a second or two when we crested hills, only to land gently on its oversized tires after. Other vehicles passed by in the other direction once or twice, but otherwise the whole place seemed very empty.
Where is everyone?
The driver glanced back at me.
At work? And even so, most people don't drive. What do most people do around here? In Candor Chasma, almost everyone's a farmer, miner, or terraformer. Republic just opened a new algae yacht. Lots of jobs. Well, until the shutdown.
Shutdown? The driver makes a face of distaste.
Politics. Something. They say it's temporary.
Most of the townships rely heavily on industry or agriculture to survive, but Candor Chasma seemed more and more like the Martian equivalent of a rural farm town. What would attract Evan to a place like this?
I heard there's a museum here. A museum? Sure. It's not much, though. If you don't mind me asking, what are you doing here? If you're here on vacation, you'd have a lot more fun at Olympus, or Eos Mensa.
I stared at a row of metal doors gliding past outside, each numbered, but otherwise anonymous and identical. Gray, blocky, and plain. What am I doing here?
I'm here to meet a friend.
He nodded, accepting this.
Well, if you and your friend get bored... there are trains to other townships.
Outside, there were more signs of construction and habitation now. Tunnels widening and intersecting with other tunnels, curving into the occasional underground cul-de-sac or small domed courtyard. Not contained under a single dome, the township is an interconnected web of tunnel streets, roundabouts, and mined-out caves. Everything looks uniform and modular. The same doors, the same lights, the same reinforced metal walls. There were glowing signs indicating a tavern, a repair shop, or a retail center, but often that was the only thing which distinguished one doorway from another. The taxi driver grinned as we turned into a wide roundabout.
May as well get a tour. Here's the town center. The hot spot of Candor Chasma.
It was the first truly large dome I'd seen so far on this drive. The walls, constructed of metal beams set into the native Martian rock, ascended several stories to the glass ceiling high overhead. Beyond shined the hazy rose-colored sky. The roundabout followed the perimeter of the dome, and in the middle of it sat the town square, squat, multi-level buildings around a tiny concrete park. A handful of people milled about, and the driver honked his horn and waved to a couple of men standing idly under a lamppost. They waved back. Everyone is very tall and thin, typical for native Martians.
City Hall is in the middle there,
said the driver, of the largest structure in the square, and then pointed across to a dark building under a pedestrian bridge.
There is your museum. The hotel is right next door.
The taxi is already leaving the roundabout, heading down a slope into another tunnel street.
And that is all of the tour.
Something is wrong. Something deeper than the culture shock of a new place. Evan wouldn't come here. Why would an archaeologist and scholar come to Mars for research? There's nothing to research. The earliest Martian settlements were barely 100 years old? And why out here in the Martian Styx and not in one of the larger cities? The driver glanced back at me in my silence, shrugging and taking it in stride.
We're almost to your address. Birch Dutter's a nice part of town. Good view of the chasm.
A couple of minutes later, I got the chance to see the chasm of the eponymous township. The tunnel ran near the wall of it, and large picture windows allowed a view to the outside. Can't deny the majesty of it. The rock falls away in layers of red, orange, ochre, and white. Feather-like clouds of dust sweep across the top of the chasm, pushed by a fierce and endless wind. Over it all, the sun, so small and soft from here, shines down through the tawny sky, grander than any mere gorge on Earth, including the Grand Canyon. Candor Chasma makes me feel insignificant. This grandeur does not comfort or inspire. It is indifferent. This is not even the biggest chasm on Mars. What are any of us doing here? In this place that needed no humans, did not ask for us, and made such a manifestation of beauty without our help. The taxi rolled to a stop.
Okay, Ingle Warren,
said the driver, pointing to a small, illuminated courtyard cave.
178 is there. You want door C. You need help with the bag.
He slid open a panel in the metal grate and held out a tablet to me with the fare on its screen. I tapped my sliver to pay.
No, I think I have it. Thank you. Sure. You want me to wait? See if your friend is home?
I hoped he was, but nothing seemed certain anymore.
Yes, if you don't mind. I won't be long, one way or another. Sure.
I entered the small courtyard, luggage in tow, still feeling surprisingly light in the low gravity. The ceiling was raw rock, with a pretty pattern of orange and white. There was a square patio in the middle, with a couple of benches and a lamp built like an ancient gaslight. Three doors. All was quiet. I rang the doorbell on Unit C. Several moments passed in silence. There was no window to peer through, no obvious security camera. I looked around, but there's not much else to see. I rang the bell again, but there was still no answer. Finally, I tried the door latch. To my surprise, the door slid open. The artificial blue-white of the faux gas lamp spilled into the dark foyer. The entrance was blocked by an overturned table and scattered papers. Shards of broken glass glinted atop maroon carpeting. I smelled something slightly foul and sour. Rotting food or garbage, maybe. Oh, no.
Evan?
My voice sounded dull in the dark apartment. I left my luggage outside and went further in. Beyond the foyer, the living area was demolished. A sofa overturned and the cushions ripped apart, the stuffing strewn everywhere. The video screen ripped down and disassembled, broken apart. Holes smashed into the interior walls, the dust scattered about.
Evan?
Still no answer. Was he still here? Was he dead? I stepped over the fallen table and fumbled for a light switch, but the fixture was broken. Everything had been ripped open. I inched my way toward the kitchen, blinking to get my eyes adjusted to the dim light. The refrigerator door hung ajar, food spoiled. The recycler was open as well, old garbage strewn over the floor, rotting. The contents of Evan's shelves and cupboards littered the floors and counters. But still no sign of Evan. By the smell, this happened a few days ago, maybe a week. I made my way to the back half of the house, and everything was similarly destroyed in the bedroom and office. Even the paintings and curtains were shredded. The sheer magnitude of the ruin was astonishing in its completeness and brutality. Beds overturned, mattresses ripped open, drawers emptied. The office was savaged, ransacked. Sheaves of paper were scattered everywhere. His library of printed books were methodically torn apart, and his collection of Balinese masks were in pieces on the floor. The carpeting had been pulled up. Evan's computer station was missing completely, as was Evan. The thought of finding his body among the shambles of his home was horrible. But not finding him at all seems worse. I ran back into the courtyard, bounding in the low gravity, nearly hitting my head on the ceiling, and shouted to the waiting taxi driver,
"Call the police!"
An Invisible Sun is written, produced, performed, and composed by W. Keith Timms, and is a production of Alien Ghost Robot Creative Media. If you're enjoying the story, please tell your friends and family about it, and leave stars or reviews on your favorite podcast platforms. I hope you'll join us on our Discord server, or sign up for our mailing list so we can stay in touch. Members of our Patreon get to hear future episodes early, plus other cool perks for all our shows. Go to InvisibleSunPod.com for more information.